It's the We Are SC podcast, the post-Notre Dame edition. Gary Pasquis joined, as always, by Jeremy Hogan, Mike Lamb. Guys, could 1 week have made more of a difference in the way that the Trojan family is bouncing around right now, smiles on the faces? If you want to cure what happened with USC-UCLA, go ahead and do what you did against Notre Dame. USC 49, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish 14. Mike Lamb, give your thoughts.
It is one of the most dominating scores, and when I look at the statistics about what happened there, it's one of the most dominating games I can remember in this series, which was really such a contrast to what had happened the week before. And the question was, in my mind, where is that USC team going to go? Are they going to go in the tank? Are they emotionally going to kind of fall off the cliff? Are they going to bounce back? And not only do they bounce back, I mean, it's one of the great bounce backs that I can recall, not just for the Trojans, but, you know, in college football, for somebody to put that together. So it's really a high note. And the other part that I took away from it were the comments from the players after the game, how excited they were for the opportunity to go play in a bowl game. And that's one of those things that you're thinking to yourself, well, you didn't get to the ultimate goal, you didn't get to do your thing. But they're ready, and they were hungry for it. And that tells me they like playing together. They want to play for this staff. And to be able to take that bitter, bitter taste out of your mouth from the UCLA game, I think is an unbelievable way to end the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not echo that? We saw some things happen during the week that, you know, there was a change at left guard. There was a change at safety. Obviously, there was a renewed focus by this team. As Mike said, you don't know, are they going to sort of go in the tank and fall apart after the UCLA loss? And we talked about it last week on the call, is someone going to rise up and be a leader on this team? And are leaders going to emerge both on the staff and on the actual player roster in the different position groups? And, you know, I don't know enough. Gary, you may have some insights as to how that's developing. But I think, you know, that to me is the encouraging part, is that they responded the way that they did. The staff held some people accountable that had some really poor games and didn't play to their potential the week earlier, made some changes, you know, allow that competition amongst the team to sort of take hold and guys to rise up and improve their games and play significantly better. And it was just a different team. I mean, it was night and day. And you hope that not only does it give us fans and other people around the program, you know, a better taste in our mouth as we go into an off season, but that you really hope that it really changes the mindset of this team to where they learn from, here's what we can't allow to happen anymore because we know what that feels like. But, oh, by the way, when you do things right, here's also what it feels like, and which, you know, is the high of all highs going out of the season. And I'll just end with this comment, you know, which is, we sat here 2.5 weeks ago and did a call right before the UCLA game and talked about, you know, the ups and downs of the season, and that at some point it was going to be August 2015 and we're going to be going into a brand new season and we're going to have all these expectations around what the 2015 season might be. And what happens in these last two games is going to determine a lot of what that feeling feels like in August of 2015. And, you know, a week ago I would have told you, man, are things possibly, could they be going in a worse direction for USC in terms of setting us up for an offseason that could be, you know, really poor and miserable, versus all of a sudden 1 week later, the way they responded against Notre Dame, as you know, you started off the whole call, Gary, we're going to be sitting here. I assume there's going to be a great bowl game. I assume there's going to be a great recruiting class. You know, everything we read. We're going to be sitting here in August 2015 with great expectations, a Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback, all the hype ready to go, and a ton of excitement around what this next year is going to look like.
And it really is amazing how the narrative got flipped so quickly. Mike, I think you hit it on the head. Yeah, one of the all-time great responses when you consider being able to do it. I give so much credit to the coaches, and we're going to get to the players too in a minute, but I want to talk about the coaches. You mentioned the players' comments afterwards, and I was struck by how pretty much every player thanked the coaches for the game plan that they put together. for this game. And I don't know about you two, but I thought it was noticeable. It seemed like this was finally the game that the coaches said, all right, we're going to take all the wrappings off these guys, and we're just going to attack and let them play. There's rumblings that Clay Helton had a much bigger role in game planning / play calling for this game, and if that's the case, bravo. And on the defensive side as well, it just seemed like things got after. Am I wrong in saying that? But it just seems like the chains came off, Jeremy.
Well, to me, it was most noticeable on the defensive side of the ball and the attacking, blitzing mentality. I mean, whether it was Hayes-Pollard coming up the A-gap or, you know, slanting the line and bringing Sua off the edge or J.R. Tavai just, you know, one-on-one being unleashed to really sort of get upfield and pressure the quarterback as opposed to stand along the line of scrimmage and just read. You know, it was a very aggressive defensive philosophy that, to be honest with you, you know, we all probably wish we would have seen a week earlier. But that said, it was there and it was unleashed against Notre Dame. It was dramatically different. And, you know, sometimes maybe it was sort of getting punched in the mouth by the Bruins and seeing, you know, how much that alternative style didn't work to finally let this staff sort of say, fine, we're going to take take the reins off and let these guys go. But it was, I mean, on the defensive side of the ball especially, to be able to do what you did to a Notre Dame offense that all season has run the ball really well, and Everett Golson has run around and made some plays, even in the games that they've lost, they've scored points. And that didn't happen. This USC defense absolutely is as dominant of a USC defensive performance against the Notre Dame offense as I recall really ever seeing, period. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievably good, and as you said, credit to the coaching staff.
And Gary, it's really interesting because if I was to go back and be honest with my assessment before the UCLA game, I was of the mindset to not pressure Brett Hundley either because of the fact that I thought that the more you pressure him, the more he's going to kill you with his feet. But, you know, what Jeremy just talked about, you know, to compare those two games and the game plan and the way that the Trojans played, if you understand defensive players, they want to do that. If you talk to them during the week and go, hey, we're going to do this and we're going to do this and we're going to mess some things up and we're going to take some chances, that gets them going. So there's a certain mentality, there's a certain mindset to a defensive player that gets them more amped and more ready to go and more to attack. And you saw it. And you guys said, you know, they took the chains off, however they did it, whatever the mindset was, it was the correct one. And those guys were just having fun. And I think that was, you know, reflected what happened on the other side of the football as well. There's no doubt that when you think about USC and about the quarterback and Cody Kessler and his performance, it was fantastic. It was as close to flawless as you can possibly have. You know, I read, you know, Matt Leinart at one point said he's got more touchdowns than he's got incompletions, and I think in the first half of the game. And to get that type of a performance out of a player that has just been superb in those types of games. So I just looked at both sides of the football. I saw some things that were much more positive, and I think that there was some sort of a wake-up call. There was something like, hey, we've got these guys. Let's utilize them. What are we waiting for? Nothing. And they just went with it. It was something that I think everybody's been waiting to see all season. Am I wrong in that assessment? Isn't that something that everybody's been anticipating seeing from this team all season long?
I don't think you're wrong at all, and I don't think it's raining on the parade of what happened on Saturday. But the question of where has this team been? I think it is a fair question without putting a damper on anything.
Yeah,
it was there all season. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and the other part is not to rain on it, but this is not a great Notre Dame team. You know, this is a group that lost a lot of people defensively. And then, you know, it just wasn't a great team that you probably saw earlier on in the season. So let's go ahead and put those caveats in there. And then let's go ahead and just take them away. It was USC that did it. It was USC that was predicting what was going to happen on certain downs. It was the Trojan defense that was dictating to the offense of Notre Dame. So I just think if you want to add caveats, that's fine. But I don't want to take too much away from what the Trojans did to control this game.
I thought it was interesting, Jeremy, before we get to your thoughts. You know, one former USC assistant coach made the comment during the game. He said, hey, this is nice that the Trojans are doing this, but let's be clear, this is not big man on big man football that we're watching here. And if you're familiar with this rivalry, you understand exactly what he was saying. But I thought what you said, Mike, is clear. Okay, it wasn't a great Notre Dame team, but go out there and do that. And there was so much more to it. I thought it was interesting watching the TV broadcast, how they were talking about, oh, Notre Dame's down so many guys. Hey, wait a minute. If you want to talk about being down guys, the sympathy starts right here, fellas.
Yeah, that's true. And let me just add in real quick. You know, college football has changed, and I don't know that you're necessarily going to have the big man on big man thing, right? I mean, we all know that are on this call right now. You know, you're not going to line up and beat somebody up the way that you did back in the day, because USC was the best at that. They just were. So if college football changes, you got to change with it, and you got to grow with it. But there's nothing wrong with having a Leonard Williams on your side. And if you can find those guys, but it's not just, you know, the biggest guys punching each other in the mouth, but when that happens, you want to be able to do it. So college football has changed, and I'm not so sure that the Trojans aren't moving in the direction that they need to.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Certainly, as much as it was fun for Trojan fans to watch this game, you know, one of the obvious things is there were a lot of people that didn't even see this game because it didn't rank highly given where USC has gone this season and certainly where Notre Dame has gone this season. It was not the national marquee game that, everybody was tuned in watching and paying attention for all Thanksgiving weekend. There were a lot of other matchups that were a lot more notable and a lot more important for the playoff picture and everything, conference races and all that other stuff. But, you know, put all that aside and look at what did this mean for USC, and in many cases, what did this mean for Notre Dame? And those are statement games on both sides. And, you know, unfortunately, UCLA made a statement game the week before against us. You know, fortunately, they came out and played like Bruins the following week against Stanford. But that said, you know, USC, I couldn't agree more, absolute unbelievable response. You know, you just look at the traits that you want to see in a football team, and are they being exemplified on the field? The attacking defense, an offensive line that got itself back together and played really good football, both protecting the pass, which they didn't do the week earlier, and, you know, getting on guys, dominant in the run blocking, putting guys on their backs, which we hadn't seen a lot of all season. I saw a lot of big physical plays of pounding Notre Dame guys into the turf by these big offensive linemen, you know. And then I gotta say it, guys. The thing that I think about more than anything else right now is how good is Cody Kessler, and I don't mean just okay, yeah, he had great numbers and he threw the ball to some open receivers, but just his presence, his leadership, his ability to move in the pocket and always have his eyes down the field, to scramble around and buy himself that extra second and a half to complete even the short 8-yard pass that keeps the chains moving. I mean, I think we're witnessing one of the great Trojan quarterbacks of all time developing right now in front of us in Cody Kessler, and I would ask both you guys to comment on that.
I would say, Mike, before I throw it to you, is, and I think one of you guys mentioned it in a previous call, USC quarterbacks make their mark in games like Notre Dame games. You know, Carson Palmer with 425 yards, Matt Leinart with 4th-and-9. You remember these ones, and I don't think there's any question. If you look at Cody Kessler setting the stage for next year, and what could be possible for next year, Mike, could you have done anything better in that game?
I don't know that you could in that game, and his numbers throughout the year have been gaudy, but I just want to take you guys back, and I don't know when it struck me, but there was a game where it might have been the Utah game, and afterwards I said, he is the toughest USC
right.
quarterback that I have seen, and I've been watching the Trojans since the early 70s. He's the toughest guy because what he has taken on. And I think that goes to, you know, part of what Jeremy is talking about. If you get in the huddle and the toughest guy in the huddle is your quarterback, you know, there's something to be said about that. And if he commands that respect, that's fantastic. But that alone doesn't do it. Then he puts up the numbers that he does. You talk about extending the play, and he's had to do that numerous times with this young offensive line and to get those things done. So I've been a fan of his all season long. I think it started last year in the bowl game when he got an opportunity to do his thing there. And he just really hasn't turned back since then. But if you're asking me, is he special, I think he is. And I don't want to heap it on him yet. But if he comes back next year, which to me is a foregone conclusion that he would, and is able to perform like this again, and the team can convert those games that they lost this year, then you're talking about a special guy, because his numbers this year compare with anybody in the NCAA.
Let me throw something out right here. When you're talking about a talking point moving forward, and Steve Sarkisian mentioned it in his conference call the other night, you know, talking about that there was a toughness and attitude in there, and he talked about the physical week of practice, and a lot of players mentioned it too. They said, hey, this didn't happen on Saturday. We had the toughest week of practice that we've had all year. And when you're talking about moving forward and getting a roster up into the 80, 81 bodies level, and Steve Sarkisian said, getting back to physical practice is one of the things I'm really excited about, because I want to have a tough-ass, hard-nosed football team. And when you look at what the offensive line was able to do, and I know this is something that we're going to enjoy talking about, the foundation that is there of what's coming back, and you look about being able to establish that kind of mindset moving forward, I think this was a heck of a step in the right direction. Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing that I think is, you know, anyone that's listened to the podcast that we do here all season long has heard us, you know, harp on this offensive line. And as much as we keep talking about, yeah, there's promise for the future, but are they really going to come together this year? Can they really protect the passer? Can they really run block? You know, and we've praised Buck Allen and what he's done behind this line. Even sometimes when holes aren't there, we've praised Cody Kessler's toughness for, you know, playing behind this line, making the plays that he has, even when there wasn't a lot of protection there. You know, that to me is the biggest upside in the team, and it's the biggest difference between the UCLA week and the Notre Dame week was what happened with the front five. You know, Cody Kessler could have made a mark against UCLA, but he can't do it if he has no time. And he, you know, when he can't get back in his drops and even, you know, raise his eyes downfield without guys already on him, that, you know, it was so poor 1 week earlier, and then all of a sudden became so good the following week. You sort of, it does beg the question of, you know, why couldn't these guys have done it 1 week earlier? But it is what it is. It's a young line. The past is the past. If you look forward and you project these guys coming back with a whole year of offseason, a whole year in the weight room, some of these guys need to get in better physical shape from just a stamina standpoint and a movement standpoint. If you get Chad Wheeler back, which I think everyone's optimistic will be back by fall camp, this, and you've got some young guys that haven't even played that are now also, you know, in the mix and potentially you know, pushing for time and even adding some depth, you know, this could be that unit as we move forward that really propels this team. And, you know, as much as we talk about, hey, we may never get back to quote-unquote big man on big man football, that you can see a time where this line, as it matures and comes together, can truly dominate the line of scrimmage, both in the run game and in the pass protection game. And I would compare it and say, if we can get to the point where this line plays like the SC line of 2004 and 2005, you know, those lines where Matt Leinart sat back there all day long. Think about it. Matt Leinart put up the numbers that he put up without ever really having a lot of pressure and having a dominant run game. Carson Palmer put up the numbers he put up in his senior season, having a fantastic offensive line and Justin Fargas back there running the ball for 200 yards a game sometimes. You know, we have not had that line that Cody Kessler's played behind. Imagine if you then develop that line with a Cody Kessler behind it and the running back talent that we have. You know, to me, that's the optimism that I have going into next year, is seeing where can this physical, hard-nosed brand of football in the trenches really take us, which to me has been the missing ingredient of this team this year.
Well, you got fired up there, Jeremy.
I did. I'm sorry. I can't wait to see it. I tell you, I saw Max Turek take a Notre Dame guy 5 yards. He was a line. Get up on one of the linebackers, take him 5 yards down the field and plant him in the turf, and I think there was a, you know, a 6-inch indentation in the turf with the way Max Turek sort of planted this guy in the ground. And I hadn't seen that out of Max a lot this year. There is something that changed this past week, whether it was the physical practices or guys stepping up into leadership, whatever it was. But that's different, and that's what, you know, we've been talking about all year. That's what's lacking. If these guys can mature and continually do that, then all the other guys, all the diva wide receivers, I hate to say it, and everybody else that does what they do, they can all run around and celebrate their touchdowns while the offensive
the true offensive
over,
lineman feelings come out.
While the offensive linemen go over and get a drink of water and pat themselves on the back. But, I mean, that's going to be the difference in, that we need to see in this team.
Mike, any diva comments?
Yeah, man, I love wide receivers. I don't know what Jeremy's talking about. You know, he's obviously looking down his nose at the glamour spot on any roster. You know, you brought up a couple of things. One is, I think my greatest memory and probably some of yours is what you just described. My favorite memory of playing for the Trojans is taking somebody and planting them on their back on the Coliseum floor. And every time I think about that moment, it makes me smile. It just does. And that's the only payoff that an offensive lineman has. I had somebody make a comment to me after the UCLA game, very derogatory about the offensive line, and with apologies to the Beatles, he called them the Fat Four, and talking about the freshmen. And I kind of thought to myself, and I looked at him, I said, you know what? They won't be the Fat Four next year. They're going to have that off season. They're going to work. They're going to do those things. And I kind of caught myself, you know, and no one's been more critical of these guys than we have on this podcast. And yet you have to take into account these are guys that were in high school. They may or may not have had a great program in the off season. You know, there's a lot of things that come into it, and they just didn't have the chance to be coached the way that they're being coached at USC and at a university level. I'm kind of excited myself to see where this thing can go, what these guys can do, and have that year of experience, because the same stunts and stuff that were working for UCLA to break down the pass protection didn't seem to work with Notre Dame. And that week, it's weird, a week of experience, and you've seen it, you know what it is, it's something that you can't draw up on a grease board that, okay, these guys are going to come here. It's something that you have to feel as a player. And it seemed as though they kind of got it and it clicked over that. So that, and when Jeremy's talking about getting excited about next season, that's the one part where I think there's the opportunity for the greatest growth. And then to, you know, reiterate the point, I can't wait to see what Cody Kessler can do in his senior season. I mean, it's just, how do you even top what he's done this year? It's very exciting.
Yeah, you say, how do you top? I don't, you know, just strictly the numbers that jump out to you. How do you top 36-4? I don't know where you go from that, because not many quarterbacks have reached that level in a season. But I want to move ahead really quick to talk about the potential for a bowl game. The Trojans, it looks like right now, Holiday Bowl, San Francisco Bowl, Vegas Bowl, one of those three in there. I know the Holiday Bowl would love to have USC come down. The Trojans have never been in that bowl game. It's the year with the Big Ten, so you're talking USC versus Nebraska, Wisconsin, Michigan State, something like that. I think that would be a fantastic matchup to be able to be part of. But I want to ask you guys your thoughts on the big advantage of being in a bowl game, and that's the extra practices that this team is going to get. And Sarkisian made a great point. He goes, you want to develop the younger players in several of the bowl practices. He goes, that includes guys who played. You know, we keep on talking about these offensive linemen, another guy who played. They're still true freshmen. And so talk about what kind of benefit is gained in these bowl practices, Mike.
Well, here's the opportunity to have some physical practices at the beginning, because, you know, you've got 20 days to go at it, and you've got an opportunity to do some things that you probably wouldn't be able to do when you have a week of preparation. So you can get back to some basics and some fundamentals, and you even have a chance to get some young guys in, you know, to a run drill, some guys into, you know, a 7-on-7 that maybe they weren't going to be in before, to temper them a little bit with that. So it is a great opportunity. You can also talk about some things that you haven't been able to do throughout the season, or go back to something that you talked about early. So you have the benefit of time being together and build upon some things, and maybe expose some different schemes and different thoughts and approaches to games that you haven't done before. So it is invaluable, and I know that's almost cliched when you talk about it, but it is, to be able to go and prepare for an excellent opponent, right? You know, to keep your focus. If you're in a bowl game that you don't want to be in, and you're playing somebody that you perceive as an inferior opponent, you're probably not, it's human nature. You're not going to prepare as hard as you could if you were talking about some of the opponents that you're talking to. So I think it's a great opportunity for Coach Sarkisian.
Yeah, I would say two things. One would echo exactly what Mike just said. I hope no matter where it is you go, that you get a great opponent that's going to draw, you know, the attention not only of Trojan fans, but even more of a national audience, and give these Trojans one more time to say, hey, we're going to have a big stage, even if it's a more minor game, a big stage because of the opponent and the matchup, to sort of show your stuff to the country one last time with this group of players. I hope that they get that opportunity. As Mike said, they will take it a lot more seriously if you're playing a, you know, whether it's a Nebraska or whoever it might be, versus, you know, Fresno State again or something crazy like that. So I hope that that happens. Number two, we talked about the players getting reps, and so I feel like that's been talked about to death. I actually think it's a great opportunity for the coaches. One thing I loved about bowl season is when you get into the grind of a season, the coaches are doing the same thing as the players, which is, okay, every week, here's a new team, and here's what we, you know, here's how we spend our weekends preparing, and then we put in the game plan on Monday, and then we're out on the walkthroughs and practice Tuesday. You get in your routine, and it gets a little bit, your ability to get out of the box and think bigger and really, you know, digest and think back on the season you just had, as well as think forward about what is it we can do differently. Those things don't happen during the grind of a season, but all of a sudden when you have a bowl and you've got those two and a half weeks of practices that you can do, those things open up again, and now that coaching staff as well gets to, you know, further themselves. And we've got a young coaching staff that is hasn't been together too long. Some of them have been with Sark for a little while, but some of them are new with him. And those guys, you know, give them the opportunity to also, you know, have a few more weeks working together with this team. It's just incredibly valuable. And, you know, to me, the real test of, you know, everyone has put Sark under the microscope and everyone wanted to fire him after the UCLA game, and now everyone's excited about him after the Notre Dame game. But the real test is, okay, you made it through your first season. Pete Carroll didn't have such a great first season. You know, now you got some opportunities to do some things in a bowl season. You're going to have a recruiting trail that comes right after that. Then you're going to have your second spring football and get into that second season. To me, what happens between now and next September is probably more valuable, although it won't get as much press, as what's happened, you know, between September and now. And this is his opportunity to really put his stamp on and grow as a staff.
All right, guys, this was a good discussion. We'll come back next week, and we will do more of a position-by-position review of the team from the 2014 season. But that's our wrap-up here. With smiles all around for Trojan fans after what took place on Saturday, USC 49, Notre Dame 14. For Mike Lamb and Jeremy Hogue, this is Gary Paskowitz. You're listening to the We Are SC podcast.